Welcome to Midpoint Monday on 88.5 FM and WMNF.org. I'm Sean Canaan. Today on Midpoint, we'll speak with Tampa area Congressmember Kathy Castor about the recently signed American Rescue Plan. We'll also talk to her about two gun safety bills that just passed the U.S. House. But first, we're going to get an update on Nestle's approval to pump 1 million gallons of water a day from a North Florida spring system to bottle and sell on supermarket shelves. We'll hear from an environmentalist about their lawsuit. Lawsuits, that is. Later on in the show, we'll open up the phone lines to take your calls. In the meantime, you can email dj@wmnf.org or you can text 813-433-0885. Last month, the Suwannee River Water Management District approved a permit for the Seven Springs Water Company to pump nearly 1 million gallons of fresh water a day from the Ginny Springs system that's connected to the Santa Fe River in north central Florida. Seven Springs plans to sell the water to Nestle so that company can bottle it for sale on supermarket shelves in plastic bottles. And joining us now to talk about the issue of bottled water and Florida Springs is Marilee Malwitz-Gibson. She's with Our Santa Fe River. Welcome back to WMNF's Midpoint, Marilee.
Hi, Sean. Really good to be back. Don't like coming back for this one all the time, but here we are again. We're not done yet.
Yeah, so let's remind people where we are. Last month, this decision by the Water Management District was to approve the pumping of the water from the Seven Springs system and bottling it.
That's right. And so the water managers, the Suwannee River Water Management District, was hamstrung by the Department of Administrative Hearings order from Judge Chisenhall this past October. He and consequently in January, he had a recommended order that basically that the district approved this permit because they had to approve it based on findings of fact. And so when the board decision came down at the end of February with the board members, seven board members, where there should be nine, at least three of those board members were not privy to the information because they're newly appointed board members. But the other four members had heard about the materials regarding this permit more than a year ago. During the past year, since March of 2020, the hamstrung situation is that the attorneys for Nestle, who Seven Springs Water Company had hired, Seven Springs Water Company is the actual entity that's getting the permit, they appealed for an administrative hearing and got one. And so for the past year, we've been in this turmoil situation regarding this administrative hearing with very limited exchange of information with the water management district and the public that know and understand how this water body, the Santa Fe River at Ginny Springs and at the Devil's Eye Complex, how important those waters are to not only recreation but also to habitat and community and also people's wells. And so there, because of the limited information from the public to the Water Management Board, who were the actual decision makers, the Water Management Board had to rely on the attorneys that went through this administrative hearing, and the attorneys only told them that they, in fact, had to vote for this water use permit. They never once said during the meeting, during the board meeting, well, you could deny it, and if you deny it, you're going to go to court, and this is what it's going to look like. The 19,000 people that wrote comments to the Water Management District asking for them to deny the permit would have appreciated, I think, the attorneys telling them how they could have denied it, even though they would have gone into court. We feel, our Santa Fe River feels that that was a really important part of discussions with the board on what they could and couldn't do and how it looked when they did it, not just, yeah, you have to go and issue this permit, which is exactly what they did. They issued the permit without even having the discussion about how you could deny it, because the Nestle attorneys jumped to the podium when one of our board members was having a discussion, an informal discussion with one of the board members for the district. And the attorneys put a gabosh on that and said, no, you can't talk about that because this is all still part of this administrative hearing business. So now our Santa Fe River is in process with two different lawsuits. One of them is a public trust lawsuit that will go to a circuit court in the Third Circuit Court. And the other one is a request for administrative hearing that we'll be filing on Wednesday. We're almost finished with that paperwork and doing it in a timely manner. So the administrative hearing that we'll be filing will be against what the board had issued at the end of February.
Well, let's talk right now about the importance of these waters. And I want to remind listeners that my guest is Marilee Malwitz-Gibson. She's with Our Santa Fe River. And we're talking about a recent decision by the Suwannee River Water Management District to approve a permit for Seven Springs Water Company to pump nearly 1 million gallons of fresh water a day from the Ginny Springs system that's connected to the Santa Fe River in north central Florida. Seven Springs plans to sell the water to Nestle so the company can put it in plastic bottles and sell it on supermarket shelves. So let's start with the water there. Many of our listeners may not have ever been to Ginny Springs or to the Santa Fe River. How would you describe the natural condition of Ginny Springs for someone who might not have been there before?
Well, the spring itself is one of the prettiest springs in terms of color and in terms of beauty in the state of Florida. And it's also surrounded by the Devil's Spring system, which is also equally as beautiful. And right next door, is Gilchrist Blue Springs State Park. We also have Rum Island Park. We also have Sawdust Springs, July Springs, Dogwood, Twin, Deer. All of these springs have water flowing to them from the exact same conduit where Seven Springs Water Company has placed two wells. Those two wells are in the ground, pumping water out of these spring systems and placing it in a 40-acre pipeline to the plant itself on County Road 340. Now, we're seeing declining flows and levels already in the Santa Fe River. We have a minimum flow and level that has already been in recovery, and now the state wants to put it in a less protective place, not necessarily in recovery, but in, I can't remember what the word is yet, protective, I think it's called protective. Anyway, so we know, the state knows that we have declining flows and levels. Why they issued this permit is mostly procedural. We tried to have the science brought in. They didn't bring the science in. Nestle brought their science in. The district our Santa Fe River feels that they brought the science in that really would have actually stopped the permit, obviously. They didn't bring it in. And because we had a minimum flow and level that was already in recovery, we feel strongly it should have been part of that permit process. Why they didn't do it, all we can say is it's got to be political, it's got to be money, because in terms of science, we're seeing declining flows and levels in all of our freshwater spring systems across the state of Florida. This one was just so egregious that the water was going to be tapped directly out of the conduits that feed these springs. We've had a minor flood just 2 weeks ago, for instance, for your listener audience, minor flood recently, and Rum Island is still broadened out. Jonathan, which is just upriver from Rum Island, Mermaid Bathtub Sitting, it's got a bunch of different names. Anyway, that one just started to poke its head, you know, its little beautiful blue head out of the water.
I'm going to pause you for a second. And when you say brownout and blue head, what do you mean?
So the river itself, the Santa Fe River, tends to be tan in color, which is brown. A lot of times when we're at the new level, which is very low, it's even clear. It used to be a clear running system 30 years ago, even when you talk to local people, that they said the water would run clear. The springs were always strong, pumping out really strong amounts of water to keep that tandem water back out of the springs. But now what we're seeing, anytime we even get a minor flood, our weaker springs, like the ones I just mentioned, brown out. So that river infiltrates on top of them. That blue is still really far below underneath the river level itself, so the blue is under there. And when those water levels start to recede, that blue literally starts to pop itself out in a very unusual way, but it's a little pop out of blue, and then eventually, after a few more days, it actually recedes completely. The brown water recedes completely and shows itself to be blue again. But like I said, what we're seeing often on these waterways is that we're not even seeing the springs being able to force that tandem water away or back away. So they brown out very easily, even when we get these minor flood stages. And that's alarming to us. I mean, we need these waters to be pumping very strong to be healthy systems. And when they're not and they're getting the brown water on top of them, that also destroys the sunlight, and it also destroys the habitat that's in the water itself. For instance, during this minor flood stage, we had hundreds of turtles show up to the Blue Springs Run, because we have found out from other previous floods, the turtles don't stay where the water's really dark, because the dark water ends up destroying the food source that they like to eat. So they all head for the Blue Springs Run, because that's still a pretty strong system, even though it's browned out a little bit with this last minor flood. So the species, the habitat, the animals, the fish, they all need to be in places where they still have sunlight reaching them. And when we have these brownout situations with normal water levels, even though we're calling it a minor flood, it destroys the aquatic vegetation underneath.
Our guest is Marilee Mull.
It's very important to have fresh water coming out of these systems, like a genie in a devil's eye is the upshot of that.
This is Marilee Mull. It's Gypsum speaking with our Santa Fe River. You're listening to WMNF's Midpoint Monday. I'm Sean Canaan. It's 12:17 in the afternoon, and we're talking about the importance of how, as Marilee was just saying, the importance of having enough freshwater flow, and we're also talking about how companies are taking that water out of the ground and putting it in bottles. So in addition to just the level of fresh water, what does that have to do with nitrate levels in these systems?
Well, the most important thing that has to do, given that we are using our land in ways that we know we shouldn't be using them in the ways that we're using them, the most important thing is that it dilutes the nitrate loading. So if we have high concentrations of pollution in the forms of nitrates and nitrogen, then we have problems with our water quality. And so if we use more of our abundant fresh water that's flowing out of the Florida aquifer, we just have stronger concentrations of those types of pollution problems in our waterways.
How much does the state get from Nestle or from Seven Springs Water Company for these companies taking nearly 1 million gallons of water a day from our springs, rivers, and aquifers?
Mm-hmm. The state gets nothing. So when you go and buy that bottled water on the shelf, there's no tax on that bottled water. Nestle doesn't pay the state any money. The only people that are making money are the manager partners of Seven Springs Water Company. Now, whether or not they're paying taxes or whatever they do with their business, it's unknown to us, because it's basically, you know, private information for their company. We don't know. There's some taxes involved with we do know there's some taxes, real estate taxes involved with the plant itself. But that plant could be owned by anybody, and they'd be paying taxes too. So these water bottling companies in the state of Florida, there's 28 permits, by the way, not by Nestle, but in totality, in the state of Florida. Not one of them pays any water that's coming out of a well, not out of a city use, but out of a well, to the state of Florida. And that is actually one of the lawsuits we are involved with, our Santa Fe River. That is a public trust lawsuit where we want the bottlers to pay the state of Florida per gallon for the amount of water that they extract out of the aquifer. And so that money could be used for possibly municipality infrastructure, for instance, to improve people's water lines coming into their taps, or improved wastewater systems. There's a bottled water tax that has this almost similar intent, where they want to improve wastewater systems. So something's got to give for these freebie situations, freeloaders taking our public trust water that's supposed to be managed for the citizens of Florida and being utilized for these corporate grabs. And the most heinous thing with this particular corporate grab is Nestle just struck a deal with a buyout company called two buyout companies are together, One Rock and Metropolis. Metropolis and One Rock are striking a deal for $4 billion selling off their water brands in North America, in America, and also in Canada. So, you know, we just gave who knows who, because this is an equity bio company. They're going to turn around and sell it to somebody, these water bottle brandings. And so Nestle just got this deal at Ginny Springs for 1 million gallons of water a day to increase their portfolio to sell this to this equity company. Because why are they selling to the equity company? Because we're doing the right thing. All of your listeners, we are too. We're not buying the stuff. And so this is a company whose water bottle brands has been hit really hard, not only because of COVID and whatever happened with COVID, but also because the consumer got smart. They realized they don't have to be buying this stuff on the shelves. They can be filtering their own water from their home. It's more cost effective to do that. It's better for the environment. They don't have the plastic waste. So because Nestle is a company with the bottled water brands anyway, with a company that is they're having problems, right? They don't sell to a buyout company like One Rock when they don't have financial problems. So something's going on there where they have to unload their bottled water brands in North America. And you can thank all of your listeners, if you're not buying that stuff anymore, thank you, because you're responsible to make Nestle have to do this type of a sale. But at the same time, they want to do this sale for $4 billion plus of water, $4 billion plus to a buyout company. And then our concern for security and for control of the most drinkable water in the continental North America, who is going to own that? Who's going to own that water when One Rock and Metropolis sells it? It's terrifying for us to think as a community that we don't even know who's going to buy it. We don't have any control over it. The state doesn't have any control over it because they issued the water use permit. If they hadn't ever issued this water use permit, we would have control of our water, just like we should do under a public trust.
Our guest is Marilee Malwitz-Gibson with Our Santa Fe River. We're talking about a decision last month by the Suwannee River Water Management District, which approved a permit for the Seven Springs Water Company to pump nearly 1 million gallons of fresh water a day from the Ginny Springs system, which is connected to the Santa Fe River in north central Florida. Seven Springs plans to sell the water to Nestle so that that company, or as we're just hearing Marilee tell us, a company that they sell their water assets to, can bottle it for sale on supermarket shelves. And you were mentioning a minute ago about a move for companies to pay for extracting water in Florida. Is there any headway on that in the legislature?
The only headway that I'm aware of today is a bottled water bill that was brought forward by Senator Tadeo. I'm not sure if that's moving anywhere in the House or in the Senate. But there is a bill up there to make a tax associated with the purchase of a bottle of water.
And you have an online activism event that's coming up this Thursday. Do you want to tell people what's happening on Thursday?
I do. And so the Story of Stuff Project is working collaboratively with many frontline communities across Canada and the U.S. to raise attention and awareness to their struggles with this Nestle corporate water grab. On Thursday, March 18th at 7 p.m., it's an online rally. We've come a long way in the last year in terms of how we organize and how we activate people with knowledge and information. The standing on the street corner with a sign or trying to do public activism is now being done through these online communities. So our hope and desire is to put pressure either with our federal government to make Nestle give these water controls back to our communities. And we hope that we hope your audience is interested in tuning into it. At oursantaferiver.org, our website, you can actually register and sign up for this online activist event and listen in. It's roughly about an hour and a half long. It's not super time consuming, but it's important, I think, to hear from other communities across our country to see what they're faced with Nestle, because they're doing nothing but stealing our water, selling it, and now they're going to be selling this concept of bottled water branding for billions of dollars based on water that should be in our environment, should be in our natural system, should be not only for the aquatic systems, for the ecosystems, but also for you and for me. And I hope your listeners tune into that event, register, like I said, at our website, and maybe, Sean, you can put that somewhere, or you, rsantaferiver.org.
Yeah, I'll mention that website again later in a few minutes, and I also will put it up on our website, WMNF.org. Mary Lee Malwitz, Gypsum is with Our Santa Fe River. Earlier, you talked about 19,000 people weighing in against this permit. How do you know that they were against, and how many signatures did you get on petitions when your group was trying to oppose this?
There were over 19,000 comments registered. What we had to do with a limited amount of people was reread 2,000 of the comments, and then we just did basically a math equation, extrapolating, you know, how many would be against it, how many would be for it. The fact remains, these 19,000 comments are mostly unread by the water managers. We thought, when we asked people to sign in and state their opinions about this permit, that they would be reading them and they would be classifying the comments and organizing them. No one's done that except when we did the 2,000 comments. And so out of the 19,000 comments, there were roughly under 100, somewhere between, we're guessing, pretty good guesswork though, I mean, based on the 2,000 that we read, somewhere between 70 and 100 comments that were in favor of it or didn't have, were not opposed to it. Several of the comments were in favor of the denial, and they would write, the public wrote that they were in favor of whatever it said. Are you against it, in favor of it? Long and the short, it's very complicated, honestly, the public comments and how to explain this to the public. All I can say is that there was a small percentage that were in favor of the bottling plant or the bottling of the water, but the vast majority, 19,000, were against it. And again, I don't think anywhere in the state of Florida have they received 19,000 comments plus in a public portal for a water use permit. And the fact is, the water managers totally pushed that aside when they made this decision to issue this permit.
Well, Mary Lee, I want to thank you so much for coming on WMNF's Midpoint Monday to talk about Nestle pumping water from Florida Springs. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sean. Okay, have a great day.
Thank you, too. That's Mary Lee Malwitz Gypsum with Our Santa Fe River. Their website is oursantaferiver.org. This is WMNF Tampa's Midpoint Monday. I'm Sean Canaan. It's 12:28 in the afternoon. We'll be right back after this short music break to speak live with Congressmember Kathy Castor about the recently signed American Rescue Plan. This is WMNF Tampa.
Sold I to the merchant ships. Minutes after they took I from the bottomless pit. But my hand was made strong by the hand of the Almighty. We forward in this generation.
Welcome back to WMNF's Midpoint Monday. I'm Sean Canaan. On Thursday, President Biden signed the $1.9 trillion COVID-19 relief bill called the American Rescue Plan. You may have already gotten your $1,400 stimulus deposited into your bank account. Other provisions will provide additional unemployment insurance and health insurance assistance. Joining us now to talk about the American Rescue Plan is Tampa area Democratic Congressmember Kathy Castor. Thanks so much for coming back on WMNF today.
Sean, thanks so much for having me.
I appreciate you being here. So let's start out with the individual stimulus payments. What can people expect?
Well, thankfully, President Biden followed through with his promise to keep that $1,400 stimulus payment on track. The $600 at the end of the year, that was a down payment. Many of my GOP colleagues did not want to do any more than that, but we know that so many of our neighbors are still trying to stabilize their lives due to COVID-19 and the economic turmoil it wrought. So yes, some of those payments are arriving in bank accounts already. It will be very important that folks file their tax returns. Tomorrow afternoon at 4:30, I'm having a telephone town hall with the taxpayer advocate who can answer direct questions. If you go to irs.gov and where's my payment or find my payment, they will have some descriptions for you. But if you run into red tape, please call my office. We have a very, very good track record on helping our neighbors follow through to receive those economic impact payments, or as I call them, those survival payments.
Our guest is Kathy Castor, Democratic member of Congress, and I want to ask about health insurance. How can people, how are people getting help through health insurance from this rescue plan?
Yeah, is there anything more important during a public health crisis in a pandemic than having access to a doctor and ensuring that it's affordable? The problem is here in Florida, because of Republicans that been in charge in the governor's mansion and in the state legislature for so long, Florida remains one of just a handful of states that has not expanded health services under Medicaid to, we estimate, almost a million Floridians who do not have that. That means that we're leaving enormous sums of our tax dollars up in Washington. We're in essence subsidizing other states and their health care. Hospitals, doctors, other providers sure could use those monies. But fundamentally, so many of our neighbors need access to affordable health care. So under the American Rescue Plan, what President Biden and the Congress has done is build on the Affordable Care Act through very important new measures. One, an expanded special enrollment period. The Trump administration was very skimpy on when you could go into healthcare.gov and sign up for health insurance. The Biden administration, recognizing that we're in a public health emergency now, has extended a new special enrollment period into May. So it's, if you need help figuring out what your options are, go to healthcare.gov and you'll be able to compare and shop around. Another important provision in the American Rescue Plan is it provides new tax credits, makes it much more affordable for families that are working class and middle class. New tax credits for families that earn well over $50,000, where healthcare could take a big bite out of your budget. It also, the American Rescue Plan also provides payment for COBRA if you lost your job but want to continue your health insurance under that previous employer. There is now some help that will help you pay the COBRA that can be very expensive. We also provided a huge new incentive to the state of Florida to expand Medicaid. So we all need to press our representatives in Tallahassee to go ahead and do that, bring our tax dollars back home and help us take care of our neighbors.
Our guest is Congressmember Kathy Castor. We're talking about the American Rescue Plan on WMNF's Midpoint Monday. I'm Sean Canaan. It is 12:34 in the afternoon, and the stimulus bill extends unemployment benefits. So what can Floridians expect when it comes to expanded unemployment benefits under this new law?
Yeah, the American Rescue Plan puts money into the pockets of our neighbors in a number of different ways. So in addition to the $1,400 per person, we extended unemployment through September to an additional $300 on top of the very skimpy Florida benefit of $275 max. But remember, the federal benefit is available to gig workers and the self-employed, whereas previous unemployment did not cover that. But Sean, it really highlights the importance of those survival payments, the $1,400 survival payment, because Florida's unemployment system was a disaster for people who were really, through no fault of their own, lost their job due to COVID. So thankfully, those survival payments are hitting bank accounts. And, you know, for a family of four, that could mean up to about $5,600, because those payments all go to kids as well. And then when you add on the additional new help of the child tax credit, or maybe if you're a childless adult but working, the earned income tax credit, This is a sea change from where the GOP had us in instead giving all the benefits to the wealthiest in the country through tax cuts. Thankfully, for a change, and with President Biden, working people and families are being invested in rather than millionaires and billionaires.
I want to talk a little bit more about that expanded child tax credit. This morning, you spoke to reporters about that tax credit that's included in the American Rescue Plan. What are the specifics? How did you have to apply to it? Do you only get it as a tax refund? How do families get access to this child tax credit?
Yeah, this is a historic opportunity to lift millions of children out of poverty across America. And here in Tampa, Hillsborough County, we're a younger community, and out of the about 850,000 people I represent, about 256,000 of them are children under the age of 18. So families can, they apply for the child tax credit when they file their taxes. You indicate how many children you have, what your income is, and the current tax credit is $2,000 per child. The American Rescue Plan, we increase that to $3,000 per child and $3,600 for a child under six. We need to make it permanent. This is just for 1 year, but we are fully intent on doing that. This is a lifeline to families who are struggling to get through the day and making all sorts of difficult decisions on whether to buy food or pay the rent or their electric bill. So in addition to this very significant child tax credit, we provide additional food assistance, rental assistance, housing assistance for our neighbors in need, because we want to bounce back and build a more sustainable future for everybody. And it's our way of addressing the rampant income inequality in America that we see. It's too prevalent here in the Tampa Bay area as well.
And some of the funds from this Recovery Act, this American Rescue Plan, they're going directly to cities and counties in our area. They'll just have cash that they can use to give to people in need in certain types of programs like rent assistance or mortgage assistance.
Yeah, Hillsborough County has been a wonderful partner with their CARES Act money. They implemented a rapid recovery and relief initiative that helped people pay their utility bill, help them with rental payments. That's very important for the landlords too, that have, you can't just have a moratorium on evictions without helping landlords maintain those properties and those units. So a lot of that rental assistance will continue to flow to make sure folks have a safe place to live. We have a real housing squeeze in the Tampa Bay area. People have discovered paradise and are moving here, and we didn't have a lot of affordable rental apartments anyway. So hopefully these new funds will truly be a rescue for many families who've been feeling that squeeze.
Congressmember Kathy Castor, what do you make of the thought of the fact that not a single Republican in the House or in the Senate voted for the American Rescue Plan, that is?
You know, Sean, there is a real difference in values. Republicans, again, just a couple of years ago, thought it was okay to add to the debt and deficit for the wealthiest people in this country, millionaires and billionaires, and gave them massive tax cuts, gave tax cuts to corporations that weren't even asking for major tax cuts. Instead, Democrats, with President Biden's leadership, we know that when you invest in families, you provide a greater opportunity for people to succeed in life. And that's what we're aiming to do, lift everyone, especially working class folks and middle class people who have been hit hardest by COVID, especially communities of color. We think the child tax credit will be particularly helpful to African American children, Latino children. And here in Tampa and in Hillsborough County, Florida, we can realize significant improvement in the quality of life for kids and families, and that just weren't available when you're expensive for the rich.
Before I turn to other topics like gun safety bills, are there any other provisions of the American Rescue Plan that listeners should know about?
The very significant investment in students and schools. There is a real issue here in Florida because the governor and the legislature refused to send down the emergency aid we provided in previous packages, the CARES Act and the other emergency package at the end of the year. Meanwhile, Hillsborough County Schools, they say they want to lay off teachers in the middle of a pandemic and others. And this is the wrong time to be making drastic decisions. So in the American Rescue Plan, we added a provision that said states, you have to send those emergency funds to students and schools within 60 days. So I don't know, we may have to get a crowbar to get the other funds out of Tallahassee, but at least the American Rescue Plan will send those money to schools because we have a lot of work to do for children in early learning and keeping all of our educators on the job as well.
Our guest is Congressmember Kathy Castor, and we're talking about the American Rescue Plan on WMNF's Midpoint Monday. I'm Sean Canaan. It's 12:42 in the afternoon. And switching gears now to other legislation, the U.S. House passed two bills on Thursday. One would require background checks on all firearm sales and transfers, and the other would allow an expanded 10-day review for gun purchases. Why did you support these bills?
Well, Sean, I'm tired of endless gun violence on our streets. Everyone's exhausted from rampages, school shootings, shootings in movie theaters and churches. I mean, what is wrong? Part of what's wrong is we don't have just common sense legislation that requires a simple background check to keep firearms out of the hands of domestic abusers or terrorists or folks that may have mental health issues. You know, death by suicide by gun is a real epidemic in America. So I was so pleased we could pass the bipartisan background checks bill again that will require, no matter how you purchase a firearm, modeled after many state laws, that you have to undergo that FBI background check. Right now, here in our community, you can go to a gun show. You're not subjected to a background check unless you're a licensed dealer. You can buy a firearm over the internet. That's not illegal. So this would subject all transfers of firearms, all purchases, to a background check, with a small exception for families and maybe if you're hunting with a neighbor. But we know the vast majority of Americans think this is reasonable, and the gun manufacturers and the folks in the GOP have blocked this for many years, and I'm hopeful we can get the U.S. Senate to take something up, at least to pass the background checks bill.
Let me turn to for a minute to your colleague, Congressmember Lucy McBath. Shortly after the House passed what she called life-saving legislation, McBath's son, Jordan Davis, was shot and killed at a gas station in Jacksonville. So here's what Congressmember Lucy McBath said shortly after H.R. 8 was passed.
And all the times that I sat in committee hearings waiting for this legislation to pass and watching you time and time and time again put forth amendments that were shot down, for this moment to be able to be here with you, thank you for that. And as a mother, as a survivor, we thank you. There's so many of us survivors and family members that have lost our loved ones that have been waiting and waiting and waiting. And today we have the real possibility to make a difference and save lives. So I thank you on behalf of all the organizations, all the leaders, all of the frontline volunteers that have been championing for this moment.
That's Lucy McBath, a congressmember who lost her son, Jordan Davis, when he was shot and killed at a gas station in Jacksonville. And that was she was speaking after the gun violence bills passed the U.S. House. Congressmember Kathy Castor, what do you think the chances are in the Senate for these bills?
I think we have an opportunity. And thanks to folks like Congresswoman Lucy McBath, who actually, you may not know, she represents a district outside Atlanta that used to be Newt Gingrich's congressional district. So she has turned into a very important national voice, unfortunately, because of the death of Jordan. I met her for the first time here in East Tampa, where the mothers of the movement were traveling through with, she was here with Representative Diane Hart and others. And I also, you have to reflect as well on the tragedy at Mother Emanuel AME Church in Charleston, because in addition to the bipartisan background checks bill, at the same time, we passed Representative Jim Clyburn's bill that will close the Charleston loophole, because part of that horrendous tragedy was the fact that the shooter was able to get his firearm because the current state of the law says if your background check doesn't go through in 3 days, you automatically get the weapon. And that's horrendous. That's not good. That's poor public policy. He proceeded to go to the church where he was invited in, and they were praying, and then massacred those folks in Charleston. So these, we need the public really to weigh in with Rubio and Rick Scott. Don't let them off the hook. They may oppose it, but don't make it easy for them by not allowing folks to hear from you. If this matters to you, and I hope it does, I hope you'll weigh in with them, and we'll push the Senate. I think the odds are 50-50 that we get the filibuster proof majority to bring it up for a vote.
Our guest for the next few minutes is Congressmember Kathy Castor. We're talking about earlier about the American Rescue Plan, and we just finished talking about two major House bills that passed about gun violence. And I want to ask you about about Cuba policy. Early on in the Obama presidency, you were a leading advocate for relaxing U.S. restrictions on Cuba, and President Obama eventually came around to thawing relations with Cuba, including sitting next to Raul Castro at a Rays game in Havana. But many of those policies have been reversed under President Trump. Do you think Cuba policy will change now again under President Biden?
I think it will be modernized. There are a few front burner issues that have to change right away. And many folks don't realize that Trump completely shut down the embassy in Cuba, which makes it very difficult to promote human rights and keep eyes on what's happening in Cuba. So reopening the embassy will be very important, keeping our diplomats safe. We still don't have good answers for some of these health issues for diplomats in Havana and China and other posts across the world. So President Biden's committed to getting to the bottom of that. Families also have been subjected to some very cruel policies by the Trump administration. It became practically impossible to visit your loved ones here in Florida through a non-immigrant visa because the embassy was closed. You were forced to pay fees and travel to Guyana in the midst of COVID and try to get a visa. Many families paid those fees, and the Trump administration just pocketed them with no recourse. So I think starting fundamentally with support for families coming out of COVID, support for small business owners, restoring the embassy, getting some eyes on what's happening in Cuba when it comes to human rights. I think those will be pushed forward by the Biden administration before we get to the larger issues of the embargo and other travel restriction.
Well, Representative Castor, I want to thank you so much for coming on WMNF's Midpoint today.
Thank you, Sean. I appreciate it. And remember, my office is always available to help folks cut through red tape on any of those federal issues, immigration, the IRS, Medicare and Medicaid. And please, everybody, go get vaccinated when it's your turn. We're going to vaccinate thousands and thousands of others this week. The Tampa Greyhound track, of course, is open 7 to 7, no appointment necessary.
7 days a week. All right.
That's right. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much. Kathy Castor is a member of Congress representing Tampa and surrounding areas. She's the chair of the United States House Select Committee on the Climate Crisis. So what do you think about what you've heard so far this show? Give us a call, 813-239-9663. We will open up the phone lines for the last 10 minutes of the show. You can also continue to email us at dj@wmnf.org, or you can text 813-433-0885. Have some emails to read from the first half of the show, and you can call in with your comments right now, 813-239-9663. So let me read some of these emails that I won't necessarily have a guest to answer, but I just want to let you know what some of the people were saying. For example, Dennis in Sarasota writes, has any Florida court approved this wholesale giveaway of a public asset to a private concern for no consideration or payment? That's a question out there. From Dennis. So thank you. Good to hear from you, Dennis. I don't know the answer. I'm not an expert, but I will certainly follow up with my guests to try to find the answer to that out. Also, Kevin writes, a great show. Why is it my water bill in Bradenton is more expensive than the permit to pump a million more gallons from our aquifer? If the price of water is going up for us, why not for Nestle? That's Kevin's quite legitimate question. And then JFK in Bradenton writes, myself, as a person who has lived in Florida 35 years, coming from the state of New York, where they had already, when I had left, a deposit on recyclables, this has to take effect in this state. We need to be able to recoup the plastic out of the environment. And the only way to do that is by changing people who buy bottled drinks all drinks. So thank you. That's from JFK in Bradenton. Well, thank you for those emails, and you can call in 813-239-9663. And we have David on the air. Hi, David. What would you like to say?
Make a quick comment to your listeners that fresh water is not a renewable resource. It is a finite resource. We can pollute it to the point where it cannot be regenerated. So when we talk about water resources, we're talking about a very finite supply. So having Nestle take it from us and not give anything back to the monitoring or monitoring of the water, it's a travesty. And I can't believe that's happening here because it's been happening in other states like Minnesota, for instance. So to let Nestle and these big corporations just steal our water from us and give us nothing in return is a travesty. That's all I had.
All right, David, thank you so much for calling in. And we have somebody else on the line. I don't know who this is. Hi. Can't put you on just yet. Let me read another text message. David writes something that is a little bit off the topics that we're talking about right now, but he writes, now that all for Hillsborough transit tax has been struck down, how do we get more direct federal funding for mass transit when it comes to this issue? Tampa Bay is always no steps forward, five steps back. So sorry, David, that's a question I could have asked Representative Castor, but I only had a limited amount of time with her, so thank you for writing in that question. Let's go now to Tanya, but before we go to Tanya, I want to give out the number again. If you'd like to call in and weigh in on any of these subjects, 813-239-9663. Tanya in Sarasota, you're on the air. What would you like to say?
Well, I'm really concerned that everybody is just saying, go take the vaccination without knowing what the side effects are. Usually with any vaccination, it takes a couple of years before we know what actually happens to people. And they're just saying to just go ahead and just take it. To trust what the government is saying. I mean, all of it just, it is a sheeple attitude, and people are not thinking of what it's going to do to us.
It's true that we don't know exactly what will happen 2 years down the road, but so far that's been proved that the vaccines have been very safe in the almost year now that they've been being tested. Very safe.
No, there are reports that are saying that it lowers your immune system. It is damaging to the body. The reports that, people are seeing is what is being let out through the media. And
No.
Really,
sorry, Tanya, you're wrong. It's not the media. The media is not filtering anything. These are scientific research that are being published in medical journals and so forth. So it's not being filtered through the media at all.
But it's not just they're not giving both sides of the argument of what, everybody's just saying, just take the vaccination. And the people who are writing that it's dangerous are not being heard.
I'm sorry, I don't know how to respond, Tanya. Not everything has both sides. I mean, they've looked at the several vaccines that have been approved. They've been approved by multiple levels of the U.S. government. They've been approved, a lot of them, in some other countries, and they are safe. So I don't know what other side you can talk about. I appreciate you calling in, though. Thank you so much, Tanya. And let's hear from Sue in Largo. Hi, Sue. Welcome to the show. What would you like to say?
I'm just in total agreement with the other fellow from New York. I'm also from New York. Most states, or a lot of states, have where you do recycling, and we need to get rid of the plastic bags. You see what it's doing to the oceans, what's going on there. But, I mean, even people in a lot of other states in this country, recycling is big. It's so big. When I live here now, and I see the junk on the ground and the bottles and the cans and the plastic, it's like, my Lord, Florida, of all places in this nation where people are coming in droves. We need to get to the top of this and start recycling. And there are so many homeless people here who would be more than happy to pick up a bottle for a nickel or a can for a dime. Good Lord, it would be a win-win all the way around.
Hey, Sue, let me ask you a question.
Sure.
So recycling is one thing. If you can create a billion plastic bottles and then recycle 900 million of them and make, I don't know, 500 million lower quality plastic bottles out of those. But what about just like reducing the demand in the first place? I cut you off. I'm sorry. Can you
repeat? I didn't hear you. I'm sorry. I didn't hear you.
Okay, well, I was just talking about reducing demand for plastics in the first place, which I think you mentioned about your plastic bags as well. So I appreciate you calling in, unless you want to add something else, Sue?
Not really. I would just like to know who to approach to get something going with this. My congressman, my DeSantis, my local government here. Where do I start?
Yeah, it sounds probably more like a local government thing, either maybe a state representative or a county commissioner or something like that, or local environmental group. They've probably done a lot of the legwork for you already.
Right. Well, thank you for your time.
All right, thanks, Sue. If you want to call in the last couple of minutes, give us a call, 813-239-9663. Otherwise, I'm going to go through some of these text messages that we've been getting. The 813 area code says, opioids were also once approved, were they not? That's true. I guess that this person is taking a position counter to me that when I said that the vaccines were approved and were found safe, and opioids can be used safely, and they can be abused or accidentally abused or intentionally abused. That's true. Let me see. Sorry, I'm going through these one at a time, these emails. Please ask Congressmember Castor why politicians refer to people as folks. It sounds very insincere. That's what Mark is writing out there. I can't ask her. She's not on the line anymore, but I hear your comment. Is there any new talk about, this is from Jeff, is there any new talk about passing legislation for $15 minimum wage on a national level? So what happened last week, I guess it was, or maybe a week and a half ago, is that the American Rescue Plan, the $15 an hour minimum wage dropped out of that to get, I guess, to make it more palatable to some of the conservative Democrats like Joe Manchin. And so that did get dropped out, but it's certainly on the radar of a lot of politicians, including Bernie Sanders. And I mean, there's many of them that want to continue to push for it, even though it wasn't in this one particular piece of legislation. Let's go now to Edith. Hi, Edith. You're on the air. What would you like to say in the last few seconds we have?
Okay. I want to know that somebody with a history of going on anaphylaxis by receiving a medication in the past, what do we do about the COVID-19? Is that a good idea or no? I wanted to, maybe the doctor could help me out.
Yeah, there's no doctors on the air right now, but I think that you should talk to a doctor about that because, that's definitely a concern. What they usually do is they make you wait after you've gotten your shot so that and there's medical personnel there.
What happened when I got, I'm sorry, I just want to let you know this quickly. I had history of cancer. They gave me surgery and then followed by chemotherapy. They offered the medication called Erbitux.
I don't know that medication. I'm sorry. And it's the end of the show. I apologize, but you should talk to a doctor and see what they advise. Thanks to Frank Knox and to our engineer, Alvaro Montalegre. I'm Sean Canaan. Tomorrow at noon, your hero, Mark Bureau, will host Midpoint Tuesday. I want to thank my two guests, Marilee Mollwitz-Gibson and Congressmember Kathy Castor. Thank everyone who called. Stay tuned now for Latino 54, coming up after NPR headlines on WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota, and